Recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the GNSO EPDP Small Team Number 3 meeting, taking place on the 10th of October 2018 at 1300 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. Hearing no further names. We have apologies from Georgia Salentis, Matt Serlin, and James Bladel. They have formally assigned Chris Lewis-Evans, Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, and Volker Grimen as their alternate for this call and for remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. All documentation information can be found on the EPDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your names before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you, and over to our chair, Kurt Pritz.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining. So today's discussion centers around specific charter questions having to do with reasonable access by third parties to data and what does reasonable access mean. And the charter questions that we're obliged to answer get very specific on the definition for this. So in preparation for this meeting, you'll see the typical staff prepared document, but it's chock full of good information. So first, just to scroll through it, is the charter questions to be addressed that are longish. And then we have specific advice from the EDPB that outlines for them when access to third parties can be given, and then the relevant temporary specifications section. And then we asked, as part of our effort, we asked ICANN, you know, what the heck does reasonable access mean? And there's the ICANN response here, which is pretty much on point, which defines reasonable access, you know, on a case by case basis, but within the meaning of the temp spec. There's also a second document here that you've been sent that you could bring up on your own. That's all the input that's been gathered on this question, pages of it from each of the groups here. So you have that in hand. So to me, it's a little bit of a tricky discussion because we're not redlining the temp spec as it is, but rather we're rewriting it into a policy. And in that policy, so far we've created definitions, you know, for what we think lawful access is, you know, lawful purposes for processing registration data. And we're taking up the issues of, you know, when it is lawful to disclose that information to third parties, whether the third parties might be registries in some cases or law enforcement in others. And so we're sort of overriding this reasonable access, but then there's other facets to reasonable access too, right? Timeliness, the form in which access is provided and such. So I'd ask us to, in our discussion, and I'm going to turn this over to David for some additional elaboration before we get started and set up, is, you know, let's focus on the charter questions themselves and try to answer them in the spirit of, you know, the work we've done so far. So we've done really good work in creating a lawful basis for disclosing data to third parties, and then, you know, how that how that information will be actualized is part of our discussion here. I think the other thing I want to touch on here is, you know, we've made a commitment to ourselves not to talk, not to have the access discussion here, but postpone that until all the gating questions are answered, just like the charter says. And I note here that in the second question, J2 of the charter questions, that seems to get into access. So we want to do the best job of answering these questions in a way that really helps our work going forward in the policy we've devised. So that's kind of murky, but it's kind of a murky area. And David, are you taking over from here?
Yes. Thanks, Kurt. This is David Blum speaking. And thanks, Kurt, for that introduction. Thanks, everybody, for getting on the call. Again, another call this week on ICANN. As Kurt says, we are flirting with something very delicate today, right? Because we've been asked not to pick up an access model conversation until we're done with the gating questions. But it turns out one of our gating questions gets at this question of what's reasonable in terms of access. Okay, so we're going to be dancing with this fine line, this whole conversation, about not going into a real conversation about, you know, a full-fledged access model, while at the same time, we're going to be talking about the elements or the criteria, or we'll figure out the right word, but something about the nature of what makes access reasonable. Okay, so we're going to have to help each other dance along this fine line, not get sucked in to the full-fledged access model conversation, but at the same time, go right up to that line and start to talk about these criteria for reasonableness or reasonable access, right? I'm hopeful about this conversation because some of you, I believe, on this call were at the front of the room in LA at the very end when we're going through the final throes on Purpose B. And at the front of the room, there were registry and registrar folks, and everybody said, you know what? We're eager to have this conversation about, you know, these criteria for access, these elements of what makes this work, right? So I'm hopeful that we can do this today to go right up to that edge of the fine line without crossing it, but really start to dive into these questions about what are the criteria, what are the elements they're going to be make something around reasonable access work. Okay. All right. So that's all I have for introduction. My thought on how to move into this is to really laser us into the questions that are being asked of us, right? So if you look at the screen and you look at the gating question that's been offered here, right, where it says, should the existing requirements in the temporary specification remain in place until a model for access is finalized? And if you say yes to that, it still asks you for some criteria around deciding whether to disclose non-public registration data, right? So we still need to look at criteria. If you think the existing requirements should not remain in place until an access model is finalized, right, which is our future conversation in the months ahead, then we need to talk about not just criteria, but some kind of framework for disclosure, okay? So I'd like to start out in that place and get people to start to talk about, all right, let's, if I had to answer this question about, you know, keeping the temp spec pieces in place for now, if the answer is yes, let's talk about some criteria. If your answer is no, let's talk about things that look more like a framework. Let's see where people are at right now and start the conversation. All right. Alan Woods, your hand is up. You've got the floor.
Thank you. You can hear me okay?
Yes, it's great.
Perfect. Excellent. I've been having a few issues with connecting recently, though. Okay. So I'm going to jump in straight away and say, you know, yes, the way that it is currently phrased within the temporary specification itself is, in my opinion, actually as far as it can be put at all. And it really comes down to one thing. We should keep the concept that the access must be reasonable, but we can't actually delve into that much further for one major reason, and that is who tests what reasonable is. And at the end of the day, I mean, if we put something into the policy, we really need to ask the question of who is going to enforce that policy? Who's going to enforce the contracted parties to provide that reasonable access? And I mean, the obvious answer for a lot of people would be ICANN. But in reality, it's not ICANN's place to interpret what is effectively a legal obligation. And the legal obligation is that under section Article 6.1F, and that is that we must do the balancing test and we must provide access to data to third parties with a legitimate interest in that. So really what you're talking about is if I as a registry do not give access to a particular requester, a third party requester, who would they complain to? Because if they complain to ICANN, all ICANN can say is it reasonable? And I think Kurt talked about things such as talking about time limits. Yeah, that's one of the reasonable things that maybe ICANN can look at, things that are manifestly reasonable or manifestly unreasonable. But when we get into that other element of, was the access as is envisaged under 6.1F, well, that's a completely different, and that complaint should go to a DPA or to a court, not necessarily to ICANN. And ICANN is not in a position to actually adjudicate on that. So really, when we're looking at reasonable, I think we really should be looking at what are the very high-level requirements that can be put on that don't stray into this legal arena, basically, that says that, was the registry operator or the registrar being manifestly reasonable in their approach to it? Did they have a proper way of getting the request through? Was it a simple request? Do they have a request form? Did they respond? Did they ignore it? Did they respond with a full reasoning? But again, not as to what that reasoning is, because I really don't think that ICANN has the ability to have any say point in that, because it is individually between the DPA, the requester, or maybe a court. So that's I'm just setting out my soul in that one. I may obviously assume that people will disagree with that, but that's where I'd be coming from.
Okay. Great, thanks, Alan. And before I jump to Volker, just one second to really make sure we're nailing and we're understanding each other. You're basically saying let's distinguish between what would be a legal set of issues, which is the balancing test and all that, with other issues that are more sort of practical or high level. And you named a couple. One was timing. Another was, I don't know if you can, Alan, just one more, click through those issues that might fall into things that you would want to make a policy about from an ICANN standpoint. Can you just tick through those one more time, Alan, before we jump to the next person?
Sure, absolutely. So the ones that I saw were time limits to an extent. I'm trying to remember if I'm going to have So time limits, the form, was there an ease of making such a request? Was it an open and clear way of making such a request? Was there a response issues to the request? Was the request just ignored? Again, was it manifestly unreasonable in a response? Were reasons perhaps given for the not giving of access, or indeed was access given in a reasonable manner, as in is it digestible? I mean, you can look at things like, take guidance from things like the data subject request where, it has to be in a readable format and it has to be understandable and legible. I mean, there's no point giving access when it's not able to be seen. But again, reasonableness in the sense of has to also be taken into account things like the state of the art, the quality of the data. And I'm going into a bit of legal here, but again, from ICANN's point of view, they need to look at to what would be reasonable to expect a registry operator to functionally do as opposed to legally do, if that helps.
Right. Great. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, everyone, for your patience on that. Volker, you're up next.
Yes, thank you. Ultimately, I would be supportive of carrying forward something similar to the access provisions that are currently included in the temporary specification. Of course, there are certain elements where I would seem to see more clarification. For example, when it comes to access that also involves cross-border transfers of data, or when it comes to Section 4.2, where we might want to clarify that just because there is a court order in, for example, a relevant court of competent jurisdiction concerning the GDPR, that might not be binding on the contracted party. So there should actually be some there would be more requirements that I would like to add to that, but setting those aside for now, I think the question of what reasonable access means can vary between contracted parties on the one hand, because obviously response times are going to be different for a registrar, for example, that has 5 employees altogether, and a registrar that has 10,000 employees. Okay, that's maybe more than GoDaddy has, but 10,000 employees in the abuse department alone, but just say a number of colleagues, not less. But you see the difference here. So what's readable in response times may vary. And on the other end of the spectrum with the requester as well, it may be reasonable to have to accept for example, 1 week turnover for an IP claim, may not, I don't know. But on the other hand, if it's a life or death matter, a law enforcement request, then a 24-hour turnaround may be what's reasonable. So reasonable access is probably already the perfect wording that we have. Clarifying it, nailing it down to days, hours, what have you, would probably do an injustice to a lot of affected parties on the requester side and on the contracted party side as well. So I would prefer this language not to be amended when it comes to reasonable access, those words. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Volker. And again, I'm going to be making a couple follow-up questions. And for instance, Volker, if your preference is fundamentally to carry forward the temporary specification language, the questions that are being asked of the group in the charter is, you know, that question A2, which is what criteria must contracted parties be obligated to consider, right? So I don't know, Volker, if there's things you want to talk about, criteria, if they're similar to what Alan put out there or they're different. But just quickly, Volker, the things that come to mind when someone said, well, what criteria should be considered?
Like I said, that probably depends on the party that's asking for access and the party that has to provide access and must therefore look at whether they are able to legally provide that access. I think nailing it down to special criteria further than the words reasonable access is a very difficult undertaking. I'm willing to consider proposals in this regard.
Okay. Thanks, Volker. Alex, you're up next.
Thanks, David. It's Alex for the record. So in to answer the first question, I think we do need this reasonable access regime, if you will, to remain in place until we nail down all of the details for access. You know, in this regime today, you know, the folks that I represent do get access to WHOIS data from several registrars. There are others where, you know, we don't get any response. So I think there is clearly a need to put a framework, if you will, around what reasonable access means. I don't think we need to nail it down. I agree with Volker there, but I think we need to create a framework around what this means. So there is some type of, you know, so we know what the process is and what to expect in the process, you know, there's some methods, if you will, to ensure that there's a response. So for example, this framework, what would it include? It would include some type of timeliness criteria with regards to responding that the registrar actually, one, received the request, and then a second timeliness, a second time period for actually responding to the request. I agree with Alan. We don't need to get into how the balancing test is done here, but I think we need to put some parameters in the framework around how long these things will take, so the requester knows what's happening. we could put a framework and some criteria around what is required in a request. Currently, each registrar has their own set of hoops to jump through, and we're jumping through them, but it would help a lot if that was, the information required from a requester was somehow the same or close to the same across registrars. And then finally, with regard to response, if the request is rejected or for any reason, that the response contained enough information for us to understand why that was made, and I think that's about it. So I think really here I'm not asking to define exactly how this balancing test is done. We're just asking for a framework around the current reasonable access regime to give some transparency to those that are using it today. Thanks.
Thanks, Alex. That's great. And just a couple things, Alex, real quick. I heard a lot of echoes, curiously, from what Alan said in terms of the functionality piece, right? You both talked about timeliness. You both talked about what is required in a request, and you both talked about reasons for a rejection of a request, okay? One thing I want to try, Alex, just going forward, since they use the word framework very specifically in the gating questions, and it's if you think that the temporary specification language should not be carried forward, I want to test with you, Alex, instead of using that word framework, which might be confusing, let's just talk about those as criteria for disclosure of third-party data, if that's okay with you, Alex, because I'm worried if we use that word framework, it draws us into that A, you know, that's section B piece, okay?
Yeah.
Great.
Criteria is fine.
Awesome. Okay. Ashley, you're up.
Thank you, Ashley from the GAC, and I want to just say I'm very pleased in that I agree with much, if not everything, that Alan said and much of what Alex said, and I'll do my best not to repeat what they said. But just to be specific to the question, so A1, the GAC's answer would be yes. And two, to follow on with what you're saying, we agree that framework would be confusing. So sticking to criteria, I think, is the most constructive term to use at this point. But to echo a little bit of what Alex said in terms of, you know, having time frames, I think there's a reference to 90 days in the existing temp spec. I would argue that's a bit long, but I won't open up that debate at this point. But I think having time frames adds to the predictability, and I think that's essentially what those requesting access are looking for, just an understanding of the rules of the game, and to actually make registry and registrar's job a lot easier in terms of, so we're not just constantly in a loop of requesting the information and not doing it correctly, or our expectations are different. So to add to what Alex said, what would also be helpful to have in here is, references to the need to have a mechanism by which to make the request obvious or available on the registrar's webpage, and perhaps even instructions for what to do. So the requests are made in a way that is clear and provides all the information that is necessary to do whatever needs to be done behind the curtain, whatever the balancing test that's being done. So it doesn't have to result in, a lot of denied requests just because the right information wasn't provided. So I think that pretty much wraps up. Oh, yes, and a rationale. If a request is denied, a rationale for why it was denied would be really helpful. Not so much to question the decision, but if a follow-up request needs to be made, at least it's understood as to what corrections need to be made and the follow-on request. I'll stop there. Thanks.
Excellent. Thanks, Ashley. Again, very much aligned with what we're hearing, the three big pieces being timeliness, being somewhat clearer or more standardized in how you make a request and how what information is needed, and the third piece being some kind of explanation on if there is a denial. Okay, Mark S., you are up.
This is Mark for the record. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Dan, you can hear me. Good. I never know on Adobe Connect if my microphone works. So I have a list of criteria to define reasonable access. Some of this you will have heard before. I'm hoping that this particular bulleted form will be useful. The first thing is that it has to conform to local law and pass a balancing test. So this has been said already by multiple people on the call, but I think we have a tendency as a group to interject things like, but it has to be lawful. So let us assume going forward that everything we're talking about is lawful and has passed a balancing test somewhere. We've already acknowledged we don't know who's doing that or how it was done. So let's just move on from there. Number one, it conforms to local law and passes the balancing test. Number two, it should be appropriate to the purpose. This is slightly different from the balancing test. It's related. So,
hey, Mark, this is David. I'm just going to interrupt you for 1 second because a bunch of people, including myself, were having a hard time hearing. You indeed are a little bit low. I don't know if there's a way to get closer to the mic.
This work.
That's better.
How's this?
Better.
Okay, I'm standing right up next to the mic. Okay, the second thing, it has to be appropriate to the purpose. And by that I mean, you know, a purpose has been set forward in order to perform the balancing test. And at that point, you can provide whatever subset of the data is required for that purpose, or it can even be a derivative form of the data that might be more reasonable. For example, if you only need to reach a technical contact, only the technical contact field might be required. It's even possible that the technical contact field need not be required if an anonymized version of the technical contact field could be provided instead. So whatever is returned has to be appropriate. That would be the second thing. The third thing is it has to be responsive. So answers have to be returned in a timely fashion. We have to decide what that timely fashion is. I agree with Ashley that, you know, if I have to wait 90 days to do some copyright work, I'm just going to escalate immediately because 90 days is crazy. I might as well just go to URS, I guess. But also, if this is an RDAP call or something like that, the performance has to be good. So it has to be timely. The fourth thing is it has to be legible. So an established format should be used. You shouldn't change your formats all the time. RDAP defines the format, so that's good. Port 43 doesn't, and we know that historically people use a variety of formats or change their formats from time to time for various reasons. Five, it should be transparent. By that I mean it should be clear how to do it. How to do it should be discoverable. If a request is received, that should be acknowledged. If an access is denied, there should be a clear error code indicating why it was denied. Six, it should be auditable. Right now we have a situation where requests come in and they may not be logged anywhere. There may be no way to form a backwards trail to determine who looked at what or why, you know, for what purpose, et cetera. And currently, a lot of this work is done using the domain tool set, which means that the data was collected in a massive anonymous fashion, and then nobody knows who looked at it or what they used it for. So reasonable access would be auditable. And I think this needs to apply to law enforcement as well. We can make the logging of law enforcement requests obscured, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't log the requests in the first place. And I think that's it. This is originally 7 bullets, but I've compressed them. So those are my 6 attributes for reasonable access.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks, Mark. Could you name one more time the fourth one, which is something about the format? I missed that one.
Legible.
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 Okay. Okay, great. All right. So another way of looking at it, a lot of similar echoes of the previous comments and stated out in a slightly different format and perhaps a more sort of, a progressive way of looking at it. Okay, Hadia, you're up next.
Okay, so Annelien, right?
Yeah, Hadia, you're a little fuzzy, so if you can speak as clearly as possible.
Okay, I'll try. So to be quick, with regard to the first question, 1J, should existing requirements in the temporary spec remain in place? Well, the answer would be yes, because we have no other alternative. And we cannot keep everything on hold until we have an access model. As for the criteria for access, definitely we should not get into the access model as the charter says. However, we do need some principles. So my understanding of reasonable access is access to data that is required to fulfill the purpose for which the access was granted. And that would differ depending on the case of the purpose. So for some purposes, immediate access might be required to fulfill the purpose. And for other cases, maybe 1 month would be fine. So I would use the 90 days mentioned in the 10 spec as an upper limit, because definitely we need to have an upper limit. We cannot leave it open. That does not mean in some cases, reasonable access would mean access to some specific data within a day or two, or maybe less. I don't know. So my point here, we could put some examples for purposes and start putting a criteria based on the case. But I'm not sure that this is something that is required at this point from the team. We could, though, with very general principles, some of which were mentioned by Mark and others.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Hadia.
Thank you.
Okay. You know, I really feel like we're circling around a set of ideas here that we could call criteria. I'm also trying to keep one eye on the chat and seeing if, there seems to be some confusion about, what actually is that question too about criteria. Let's keep moving forward and see how we do. Thomas, you're up next.
Thanks very much, David. Hi, everyone. In principle, I like the language as it is in the temp spec, but I think we need to make minor tweaks to it, and I should also say that I agree with much of what Alan, Alex, and others have said. As I mentioned in the chat, I think the word access is misleading in this regard, because access suggests that folks can go to a contracted party and access data. This is not the case. They can request data, and then these requests need to be processed in a certain fashion and responded to. So access sounds like it's a self-service, and it is not. Also, access sounds like you can get to as many data sets as you want to, but in fact, what we're talking about is a one-by-one request that need to be responded to. This is why I would prefer language capturing this. I'm not welded to the proposal that I made in the chat, parameters for responding to lawful disclosure requests, but actually we're not talking about access, but responses to disclosure requests that need to follow certain criteria. Then the current language of the temp spec only makes reference to responding to disclosure requests based on a legitimate third-party interest. And that is not the full story. As we've discussed in other areas, we have the possibility to disclose data for UDRP and URS. That would be covered by 6.1b. We have responses to law enforcement requests. That will be done according to 6.1c. There might be emergency cases where a contracted party will disclose data to save somebody's life. That would be 6.1e, I guess. So basically to protect vital interests. So what I'm saying is that we have a catalog of lawful basis, of legal basis for such disclosure. We can either enumerate those or just change the language to cover lawful disclosure requests, because that suggests that we need to have a legal basis for such disclosure. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Okay. Alan Woods, you're back up.
Thank you. So Thomas has stolen all the wind out of my sails, which is great because that means I agree. I actually agree with absolutely everything Thomas said there, so that was brilliant. What I will say, and I apologize to everybody who agreed with me, I also think that we need to be very careful with how we are looking at our scope here as well. If we are to say that we are confirming the words with the changes that Thomas suggests, you know, we are looking at making that which is in the temp spec, we're assessing whether or not that is sufficient to ensure our ongoing compliance until such a time that we can put in things in place by a normal paced and not high stakes game of EPPP. So the criteria, I'm really glad, David, that you made the distinction between criteria as well as framework, because I don't think our job is to do a framework. I definitely think that we should pave the way for that framework, and I think it's very important and vital that we do, because, you know, it is good to have some sort of a uniformity in the sense of how one is to access or how one to apply for, sorry, not to use the word access then, to apply for a disclosure request, because that would help both the, you know, sides of the field, both people on the registry registrar side and on the other side as well. So I just want to say that, it, you know, if we are going to go down the route of making criteria in as part of our scope, we need to be very mindful of the fact that that's technically not our job. But if it is something that we really need to do to move forward, I think that is possibly one of those areas we could compromise on in order to get our process moving much swifter, much faster. Again, as long as it's at a high enough level and it's not in its own sense unreasonable. So I will end there. Just want to say one more time, though, that I really agree with everything Tom said.
Thanks. Okay, my cue got a little bit weird, and I'm going to privilege quickly going to people who haven't spoken yet. So let's hear from Farzaneh and then Benedict, and then I'll come back to Ashley and Mark S. So Farzaneh, you're up.
Hi, I'm sorry, you put me on the spot. Thank you, David. So basically, I just put my opinion in chat, but I also want to just briefly mention the background of these of the Section J. When they were drafting the charter, we did raise our objection to this section to be placed here before all the gating questions are answered. And they are very, very similar to talking about access as like a framework. And but anyway, that's like a done deal. Now we are here discussing the questions, so I'm just going to answer. My opinion is that the for J1, should existing requirements in the temporary spec remain in place until a model for access is finalized, then I think the response is that, okay, yes, but however, I support what Thomas said about using the right term and something that is like used in GDPR, which is like disclosure is like a processing activity in GDPR, I believe. And then the quest JA and JB asks under section 4A, what is it meant by reasonable access in non-public data? Now, I think this question is very broad. It gives us, that's good. It gives us a lot of room to play with the board. However, reasonable is a word that even in a court, they have a trouble defining it. And there's like 100 years, a century of court cases that try to define reasonable, and they have not. So I don't think in EPDP we can actually come up with the definition of reasonable and what is it meant. What we can do is that we can say that at the moment they can, reasonable should be considered as legal, what is legally allowed. And then for the A2, what criteria must contracted parties be obligated to consider in deciding whether to disclose? I think this question about criteria, we really cannot respond now. And also, as Alan said, later on we could come up with like some kind of like an overarching framework. We cannot go to the details of what criteria because it varies jurisdiction by jurisdiction. There has to be like a set of like basic standards. However, I don't think we can in this team at the moment at this stage come up with a set of criteria. Also, I don't like the word criteria. I think it's the wrong word to use here. Thank you.
Farzanai, before you go back on mute, I just want to test with you some of the things that have been said on the call. Whether we use the word criteria, we come up with a better word than criteria. What has been said on the call is there's a fair amount of agreement that there's some sort of functional issues, to borrow Alan's word, that this policy group could name, right? Even if it doesn't come up with the number, like, oh, it's 10 days or whatever. But this group can say, hey, here's at least three things that are really important, right? That there needs to be some criteria around timeliness. There needs to be some criteria about the elements that are required to make a report and make that, a request and how that request is successful. And there needs to be some, criteria around how to respond in ways that provide enough detail that people can understand if their request is rejected, for instance. So those are kinds of the things that people are saying, and there's some additional ones that were said. But Farzanai, does that feel right to you? Do you get to the right level of sort of, naming these as elements or criteria while not actually getting down to the nitty-gritty of saying, well, it's going to be 10 days?
David, I am very hesitant to accept at the moment before answering all the questions about processing activities of collection and going through all the purposes. I am very hesitant to come up with these overarching framework of how it should be dealt with. But if the group really insists that we have to now set the criteria and feels that it can in such a short amount of time set up criteria that is, first of all, legal, and all the registrars can agree to it, then, I don't know what to say. I don't think that would matter, really. But I don't think that we can now do that. We have not answered fundamental questions. I think my answer would be in the end no, but that's not because I am against legal access. That's only because we have not gone through our purposes, our data elements, we have not analyzed them, and I don't think coming up with a set of overarching criteria now can even happen. But if the group thinks that they can do that, then that's good.
Okay. Excellent. Thanks. I'm going to quickly jump to Benedict, who hasn't had the floor yet, and then I'll go back to Ashley. So, Benedict.
Hi. Thanks, David. Hello, everyone. Fazi, I'm actually good with reasonable instead of legal. And my thinking behind that is I don't want to validate or automatically validate requests from every country based on this word legal. Reasonable, you're absolutely right, argued about. And it's this, I think it's more of an idea from common law, so Anglo-Saxon kind of law, where you chew over what's reasonable. And I know it's vague, and I know it doesn't give good precision, but what it does enable, and this is getting into the sort of sex question J2 discussion, is for us to start to think about case law. So we can actually start to build up a bunch of requests that we all agree are stupid, and a bunch of requests that we all agree are kind of sensible, and then to really... And this is obviously for a future model to start to chew over, have a body, have a panel that can chew over the tricky questions. And to me, this comes back to the question of thinking, the question we've come back to again and again, which is what's ICANN's role in all of this? And I think ICANN's role is to either log or insist that contracted parties log all requests, which to my mind, suits you, Fazi, for transparency, suits the registries and registrars to avoid egregious requests, and I don't think law enforcement will object, and others will object, to having their requests logged in a transparent way. So that's my pitch, is for that to be ICANN's role, to make sure that we've recorded all the requests that go in and out, both refused and accepted, and that we have a panel of some sort to look at those. Not compliance. It needs to be a sort of something more adjudicatory. Separate point, Thomas. You blithely said law enforcement requests will be covered under 61C, although we haven't made written a purpose for those. That applies to law enforcement in jurisdiction within the EU. It doesn't apply to law enforcement out of jurisdiction. So I personally see law enforcement as part of this. This sort of access discussion that we're not having. Thanks very much.
Great. Okay, Benedict, thanks. Ashley?
Thanks. This is Ashley from the GAC. Not to disagree with everything that was just said, but I just wanted to reiterate that there are opportunities in which something besides legitimate interest will be the lawful basis. So I agree with Thomas in that we probably should be respond more in the broader sense, or at least say, or other lawful basis, because whether or not, if it's European law enforcement, I mean, they're still accountable to GDPR, and they will likely have other lawful basis besides 61F. That being said, just wanted to also note, out of an abundance of clarity, that at least from the GAC perspective, we are not looking to get into the details of the criteria for determining access. That is not at all our interest. Our primary goal is to put into place predictability as to how requests for access is done. And this is by no means what we would expect out of a unified access model. These are just basics in terms of, you know, the rules of the road in terms of seeking or requesting information. So just to make that abundantly clear. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Ashley. I'm confused about some old hands or some new hands. Mark asks, is that an old hand or is that a new hand? New hand. Okay. Mark, go ahead. And Benedict, if that's a new hand, just keep it up. If it's old, take it down, please. Thanks. Mark S.
Okay. I think following Thomas's intervention, I'm going to use the term disclosure most of the time rather than access, because it does feel like it's more appropriate to the conversation. Regarding lawfulness, please recall that my very first criteria for reasonable disclosure was that it be lawful. So I don't think we need to go back to that, and I would not replace reasonable with lawful, because lawful is merely one criteria of what makes things reasonable. Regarding the term reasonable, I agree with Benedict that it's actually not an unusual term. Within certain contracts, the phrase reasonable commercial efforts is very common, and within certain situations, that term is well understood. You know, so going back to case law and precedent, in this particular case, it is not well understood. So I understand, it is an undefined term at this time, and that is why we are, in fact, here. And regarding what can this group determine right now, I think it's limited to things like the transparency and timeliness criteria that I laid out. So, for instance, is 90 days really appropriate or not? Is it okay if I make a request and I get no response? That's not very transparent. Is it okay if people can't figure out how do I even go about asking? You know, I used to use anonymous port 43 and now everything's redacted. How do I even ask? So lack of transparency, lack of timeliness. I think those are the types of things we can discuss right now here without having to worry about the more complex issues of, how to determine legality, how to determine a balancing test. I hope that makes sense.
Great. Yeah. Thanks, Mark. I'm just going to go in the order I see it on my screen, which is Alex, you're up next.
Thanks. It's Alex for the record. Yeah, so I'm hearing actually a lot of agreement here, which I think is great. As I mentioned in the chat, I think it'll be quite easy for us to come up with a set of criteria, or whatever word we want to use, that is a win-win for both the registries and the registrars and for those asking for disclosure. I think really the important criteria is around, as we discussed, timeliness, request specificity, and response rationale. We've talked about how we don't want to or may not want to get to actually define a specific time frame for these things, but I'll note in previous PDPs that I've been a part of that in fact we have set these time frames and time periods. So I think it's something we could do, but I agree in terms of making forward progress, we should probably set the criteria first and then determine the details, specific time periods at a later point in this process. Thanks.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks, Alex. Alan Woods, you're up.
Thank you. I just want to have a quick, I'm not disagreeing with anything as well, I just feel like I need to keep saying this. But with something that Benedict said, it's something that you said before, and I think because we're having such a good conversation here today, that I just wanted to raise it with regards to this specifically. And it was, you said that, this regulation will only apply to, or so 5.1e, or 6.1e, what I'm saying, will apply only to European law enforcement. Can we just be very, very careful in how we're talking about this? It's not the job of the EPDP to contrive a means by which people, such as law enforcement, are able to get access to our data outside and around the GDPR. I'm sure that the law enforcement people are very, very, very aware of, the requirements of due process and following, the specifics of their individual, treaties or requirements. And I'm sure that there are sharing of this data in some way. I don't think we can take into account absolutely every aspect of every single police force in the world in this concept. So I just want to be clear that, it's not our job to think of specifically the FBI, just that law enforcement who have a legal basis to access and is written in specifically to the GDPR under 6.1e should be able to exercise that. I don't think we need to go further than that.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Mark S., and then I'm going to do an attempt to name where we're at and see how we're doing. So, Mark S.
I realize that law enforcement is largely going to be discussed elsewhere, But one of the criteria I set out for reasonable disclosure is that there be an audit trail. And I do think that an audit trail applies to law enforcement access and disclosure as well as non-law enforcement access and disclosure.
Thanks. Okay, great. Okay, so folks, there's a lot of circling around some big ideas here that I think are important. And I'm going to name what I've heard, and then we'll see if this we're heading in the right direction, and maybe we can just set off a couple of you to do a little drafting. But so what I'm hearing, first of all, let's get the terminology as precise as possible. I think when we're talking about these criteria and things like that, let's try to use what Thomas said around using the term disclosure rather than access disclosure to third parties. And so let's try to, in the way we're writing this up, and you all as a group, let's use the terms that feel most comfortable for you, and that feels most comfortable. Okay, so that's point number one, overarching piece. Then, on terms of sort of the questions that have been posed in the charter, everyone has said yes to that first J1 question. It should remain in place. There's been talk about some tweaks to language, but in general, there was an answer of yes. There's some difficulty in defining reasonable beyond reasonable. However, you all made some very concrete suggestions about, let's call them criteria for now, but the way that contracted parties should be thinking about and all other parties should be thinking about this process of disclosing non-public data to lawful third-party requests. And the way you talked about it was that lawfulness, right, a balancing act, whatever you need to do, if it's 6.1F or whatever your right lawful basis is, that needs to be there, and that's sort of step number one, and that's something that needs to happen, and the registrars, the registries, the contracting parties need to do that, and that's a given, but it's important to name it. And then beyond the lawful issues or the legal issues become a set of more functional or practical issues that you as a group are comfortable naming now, with, I'll say, a quick caveat to Farzaneh, who is saying, I really want to see how we make progress on the purposes and processing activities. But in general, you're feeling comfortable naming a set of sort of functional criteria that would help give some, context to this concept of reasonable. And the ones that keep coming up again and again are this issue about timeliness and responsiveness, right? This issue about providing some more standardized guidance about what needs to go into a request to maximize its chances of being successful, right? And this issue about responsiveness and when you get a response, particularly for a denied request, so it's clear enough to understand the reasons why. Okay, there's some other things that have come up that we haven't debated as strongly, such as the auditable trail, such as the general stats on logging, right? But we haven't really gone all around on those. But the three I mentioned initially are three that clearly everyone who's spoken feels comfortable with. So my question to you all is, if someone, some of you or staff or somebody writes this up, is this going to be feeling like we're in the right space, we've hit that right fine line between not talking about an access model, but yes, addressing these questions in the charter questions? And as somebody said, I can't remember who it was, maybe Alan, pave the way for a framework, but not actually do that because it's not our job. Okay, so does anybody feel uncomfortable if somebody takes the pen and tries to write up a little bit of my rambling synthesis right now? Does anybody feel uncomfortable if we start to capture this on a piece of paper? Will depend who, right answer. Okay, yeah. So, great. So how about this? I wonder, if folks who are feeling the least comfortable about it maybe become more close to the drafting moment. So maybe, maybe you and staff and myself, I don't know, could do a quick summary of this call that says, this is what we spoke about. There were some concerns, but basically this is where we were circling around. Okay. Great. So here's my feeling, folks. I really feel like we might be spinning our wheels if we go around this a whole nother time. But let me turn it back just for a second. Kurt, Marika has a hand up. Great. I was going to say Kurt or Marika. Marika, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, David. And maybe jumping ahead here, but staff has actually been taking notes in the background, and I actually took a first stab at kind of writing up what I think I heard and what you seem to have summarized as well. So I'm happy to put that up or alternatively just include that as part of the notes so it could serve as a starting point for further work this small group may want to do before it turns it back to the larger team. And just to note for those that may not have been on some of the other calls, it's a similar way how I think we've worked with the other small teams where we've tried to kind of write up a potential recommendation that could be included in the initial report for first a small team to review, and then once they feel comfortable with it, then kind of float it to the larger group. So as I said, you know, I'm happy to put it up on the screen now, or if you think it's more productive to actually include it as part of the notes so people can digest a bit further and then kind of comment on it. And we can put it up as a Google Doc so people can then work on it as they want.
I'd say, Marika, thank you very much. I'd say put it up right now, folks. Let's look at what Marika's got in terms of the summary. Let's throw it on the screen, and then we can – let's do one more round if we need to sort of help Marika work, you know, improve that summary. And then let's really dive into it in a calmer moment, maybe later today or tomorrow, so that we can work on a Google Doc. So let's look at this. I see something's happening on the screen. There it is. Okay, great. Let's just take a moment and read this, folks. I'm just literally reading this, and I think we should all read it in real time. So just tune me out and read, please. Okay, so thanks, Marika. That's helpful. I'm not seeing on there the issue about a response for rejected request having a clear rationale or some kind of answer to why it was rejected. Oh, there it is. Sorry, rationale for rejection request. My bad. Okay, folks, when you read this, how close is this? What's not in this? The word timelines. So for those who might be opposed to the word timelines, that is something we spoke about quite a bit on this call right now. We called it timeliness criteria. So maybe timelines isn't the right word there, Marika, but time frames, timeliness. Okay, there we go. Great. Okay, other things, folks? I see hands. Volker, is that hand for that issue, or do you have another issue you want to bring up? Volker, you have the floor if you have another issue.
Yes, that's mainly for this issue. Depending on how those are framed, this could be problematic. Like I said in my opening statement earlier today, what is reasonable as a timeliness criteria might be different for a five-person registrar than for a registrar with a 1,000-person abuse team. So we note that once we start nailing down such criteria, this could put some registrars in hot water with compliance through no fault of their own, simply because of not having enough staff to deal with these requests. So I would not like to include any reference to timeliness in this at all.
Okay. So thanks, Holger, for that. I feel like there was a lot of talk on this call about timeliness and the importance of that. And so I think what we need to put then in the notes is that there were concerns expressed that timeliness not be translated into standards that are not that are impractical for different registrars or registered contracted parties, right? So what we're not doing here is putting a straitjacket on contracted parties, and we need to recognize there's different capacities and sizes. So Volker, my suggestion there were to say we have to leave timeliness in because it's been a big part of this conversation today, and we can add in this issue that let's be very careful here that we're not creating straitjackets for folks because we recognize that contracted parties are different in size and scale. Okay. Farzanai, I see your hand up.
Yes, thank you, David. This is I'm generally okay with this, but I think there are too many adjectives in these criteria. So, for example, you have clear communication, then we don't want later on they say that, okay, so we have to define clear. And then also requirements for what information responses should include. So what do we mean by requirements? I think we just want the rationale for rejection or it can even be the rationale for delaying the request. So I think we should go a little bit broader than what we have here, but I am generally okay with it. And then what we have, that's it.
Okay. I am fine. Great. Thanks. Yeah, I hear you on the adjective things. Adjectives are dangerous words. So perhaps we can do this a little bit more cleanly in that way. Alex? Still on mute, Alex.
Thanks, David. It's Alex.
Yep.
Yeah. I just wanted to quickly respond to Volker's last comment. I mean, I appreciate and totally understand that whatever policy we create here needs to account registrars of varying capabilities and staff sizes. I think that's important. I'm also having a deja vu because I think, Volker, we spent a lot of time talking about timeframes in the privacy proxy implementation. We may want to look at kind of where we ended up there with regard to timeframes. But what I think what's important for me is that we don't end up in a spot where 90 days after a request was sent, we get a response that that says we'll get to it when we get to it. I think that's unreasonable, and it seems to me that that the tools exist today for even a one-person registrar to basically auto-respond to an email received that says, hey, thanks for your email, we received it. Today, I think that's reasonable. Today, sometimes we don't even get that type of response. So I think, again, there's a happy medium we could find here. And again, taking into account the needs, making sure it's a win-win for registrars of all sizes and also those that are requesting disclosure to this data. Thank you.
Great. And I do want to note that you had said that in the chat, and now together, when we talk about timeliness, there are, you know, components of that. It could be recognition of receipt of a request, which could be an auto thing, and then the other piece of timeliness is when you actually get back and answer the request. Okay, Alan Woods.
Thanks. I feel like I'm playing best supporting actor again here. Yeah, no, I agree with Alex. It was just how do you put into the chat that, you know, about, and she talked previously about the upper time limit, and I mean, I would shy very much away from having that concept of an upper time limit. because, you know, these requests are usually not a one-size-fits-all. And from the ones that even I've received to date, you know, there are varying considerations for each one. So to actually put a upper time limit is probably too much and is unnecessary. So I'm not going to say much more on that because I think, as I said, Alex covered exactly what I was thinking.
Okay. Great. I'm going to suggest something here, folks, which is I'm going to suggest that we don't spend our time today talking about how you resolve this practical timeliness criteria. Let's just say you're interested in exploring that, and that probably is going to be a good enough answer for this period of time where we are. The other thing that's not in this summary right now is, as far as I'm concerned, that, you know, let's make sure we have some great clarity about our purposes and processing activities, particularly as related to third parties, before we lock things down here. And so that may need to go in the summary, and I think it also suggests why it's a good moment to pause and not try to go into details on some of these, like timeliness or, you know, format or what communication really is required, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Mark S., you have a nice green check, which I like. Did you want to say something, too?
No, there was a question. How many people agree that we can, what was the phrase, discuss this later, and interested in exploring it? And so I put the green check and said, yes, I am interested in exploring it.
Great. Awesome. Okay. Okay. All right, folks. I think this is going to be one of these instances where we did our work. I think we just did it in an hour and less than 15 minutes, an hour and 10 minutes. And I just want to double check if there's anything else people need to say before we get off the phone. Do a little tweak on this and put it in a Google Doc and let you all work on it. Anything else that needs to be said before we get off the phone on these issues? Kurt, please go ahead.
Thanks, David, and thanks to everybody. So, I don't think we need to keep this in this small group. I think that if you want to take this back to your stakeholder group or constituency or advisory committee, I think that'd be okay, too. So if we're going to consider this or anything else, you know, online, feel free to share it and with your group so we can get it into an acceptable shape quickly. Thanks, David.
Great. Wonderful. Marika, you've got your hand up. Did you want to chime in about some next steps or other issues?
Yeah, this is Marika. So staff will go ahead and put up the notes with this recommendation on top into a Google Doc so you can work on it. The question I have is, what will be a reasonable, deadline for you all to review this before we can take this back to the full team? Would it be okay if we leave this open until Sunday, so then early next week this can go to the full group, so again everyone has a chance to look at this before people start traveling and hopefully even sign off on this, or at least raise flag issues that people may want to discuss further in Barcelona so we can plan accordingly. Is that okay with everyone?
I take that silence as a yes. Okay, great. Anything else, Marika?
No, thanks, David. Nothing from my side.
Okay. Okay, folks. Great. Thanks. Wonderful. Have a great day, and please do look in on this Google Doc. And remember, as you go and work on it, remember what was said on this call. Remember how we circle around pieces in which you all felt fairly comfortable. Try to keep that spirit together as we go back into the big group, and there's going to be some winds that buffet this as the big group also has to do the thinking process you guys just did on the call. Okay, great. All right, enjoy your 45 minutes, everybody, and take care. And I imagine we'll be hearing you tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon on the call. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.